This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with co-owner of Vines of Mendoza, Michael Evans. How are you, Michael?
Doing great, thanks.
Excellent, excellent, excellent. We're in Gauchos in Piccadilly, actually, aren't we? Which is sort of an Argentinian restaurant, so it makes sense that we're going to be talking about Argentinian wines.
Absolutely.
You're co-owner, as I said, of Vines of Mendoza. What exactly is Vines of Mendoza?
Well, the Vines of Mendoza primarily is we offer private vineyard estates, so small vineyards for people that are passionate about wine that would like to have their own small vineyard and produce their own custom wines. So we started that about 13 years ago, and 4 years ago to add on to that, we opened the Vines Resort and Spa, so a luxury hotel right there on the middle of our property, which is about 1,500 acres in Mendoza's Uco Valley.
Okay, we're going to talk a lot about Uco Valley today.
Great.
But let's just deal a little bit with Mendoza as a general wine region. Mendoza, pretty big wine region. I read somewhere it's like one of the biggest in the world. What's your numbers?
It is. Well, Mendoza produces, or Argentina rather, is the fifth largest wine producer in the world. And somewhere way above 80% of those wines in Argentina are produced in Mendoza. It's really the sweet spot of wines and winemaking in Argentina.
Okay. And Mendoza, like any wine region, has got to be broken up into subregions. Well, we're going to talk about Uco Valley, which is one of the big subregions. What are the other sort of main subregions?
Well, the wine region really developed first in Luján de Cuyo and Maipú, the older traditional, where all the wineries that have been there for many, many years.
Luján's just south of Mendoza.
Just south of Mendoza.
And Maipú is?
Kind of southeast of Mendoza.
Yep, okay.
And then San Juan, all the way further to east, there's also some larger wineries out there. But the real development over the last 15 years or so has been out in the Uco Valley, so about an hour south of Mendoza.
Okay. Just before we get on to Uco, there's a more bulky area for producing wine as well, isn't there, in Mendoza? What's that?
Yeah, that's in to the east. So that would be some in Maipú, definitely out in San Juan. Some parts of Luján are more focused on the bulk wines and table wines.
And what's the big difference for those regions compared to the more premium areas?
Altitude. They're lower altitude. Up in the Uco Valley, we're closer to 1,100 meters generally. And this is closer to the city and probably closer to 800 meters.
Okay, so altitude is a huge difference. Is there much difference in soil? Like I've read somewhere some of the soils are gravel, some are more alluvial.
Virtually all of the vast majority of soils in Mendoza are alluvial. And depending on proximity to the ancient riverbeds, you get more or less of that soil. But it's fairly uniform across the region.
Which is quite funny because alluvial is quite a sandy sort of soil, isn't it?
And sandy, tons of rocks.
Yeah. So normally sandy soils, you tend to get lighter wines, but Argentinian wines aren't really that light, are they?
Generally not. And that, I think, is the altitude and the sun. We have over 300 days of sun each year and snowmelt from the Andes to irrigate the vineyard. So I think that's what that combination of those things is what gives the intensity that Argentina is famous for.
Okay. A lot of people have, as you're saying, moved out to Uco and then up further up into the valley, or expanding Uco into the hills more and more and more. I was reading somewhere that one of the limiting factors of going higher isn't so much the will of the winemaker, but it's the will of the gods in the form of water.
Well, it certainly is harder to deliver water further up you go, but you also then the higher up you get, you don't get as much heat and it's harder to get ripeness. So somewhere between 1,000 and maybe 1,200 meters is the sweet spot. There are some varietals that can do better higher or that are acceptable, but there's so much land still in that zone of about 1,000 to 1,200 meters where people generally focus there.
Okay, so you're saying that Mendoza doesn't sound like it's anywhere near fully planted yet.
Oh no, there's been a lot of planting over the last few years. Certainly over time, as the world becomes aware of the challenges with water, Mendoza is very cognizant of that. And making sure that we're efficient in the way that we use the water so that we can continue producing wines.
Do you still use flood irrigation, though?
Very little. There are a few older traditional vineyards that use flood, but the vast majority now is drip.
Really? Because drip The thing about drip irrigation is that it's expensive to install, but it's really good for water. So if water's expensive, then drip is the way you go. Whereas if water's cheap, then there's no point in trying to save it. So flood irrigation is the way to go.
Part of it's expensive, and part of it's, I think, thinking long term. We need to preserve the aquifers, and we need to preserve the water. And with changing weather patterns all over the world, we want to make sure that we retain that. So I think that part of it's certainly commercial, but there's also a custodial aspect of this that people want to make sure that they can reduce the use of their water to what they need to. Also, for us, we can control to a much greater extent the amount of water and the frequency if we water by drip than if we water by flood. So as Mendoza and especially the higher quality projects, there's no option. It's a much better from a quality perspective.
How expensive is water in Mendoza?
Well, the water's not so expensive. The challenge in Argentina is that about half of the vineyards, I believe, are watered from surface water, and the other half are from wells. And the wells, of course, pumping it out of the ground is expensive, given energy costs over the world have been increasing over time. So it does get it can get expensive. And we use a lot of water in a vineyard, of course, especially with the amount of heat and sun that we have in Mendoza.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's talk about UCO now, because I know that's the area you guys are based. You were saying earlier, we spoke last week about some of the vineyards you had a good look around Mendoza. Why did you choose UCO Valley?
Well, for us, it was simple. There was no question in our mind that that's where the highest quality wines are being made and are going to be made. There's certainly great wines from all over Mendoza, but making great wine is the culmination of hundreds, if not of thousands, of little tiny decisions. And of course, terroir and where you are is one of the most important decisions. And we think that's where the highest quality wines are going to be made. The combination of the quality of the soil, the altitude, quality of the sunlight, and the water from the Andes seems to be a perfect recipe for great wines.
So Luján de Cuyo is an older wine region. I think it was one of the first set up in Mendoza. And it's got its own appellation system. I understand it's the only one in Argentina that has its own appellation.
Well, they're actually expanding that, and there's been a number of appellations that have been added, not only in Luján, but throughout Mendoza, and they're developing that system now.
Okay, is UCO going down that process?
Yeah, and we're just we're in a sub-region called Chicages, which is getting a lot of notoriety that they're defining the actual lines around now.
Okay, so we will see a PGI or some sorts with.
Yeah, they're working on the system, but obviously it's important from a marketing perspective for people to know, because obviously the characteristics of one region are very different than another. And for people that haven't been to Argentina, haven't seen the mountains and the proximity of where these vineyards are, it's very difficult to know where, if they know where specifically a wine that they love is from, then they're going to be able to find others.
Okay. And also, a lot of people have got brand awareness about Mendoza. They've got brand awareness about Malbec. UCO's a little bit out there, and by the time you're starting to get into sub-regions of UCO, you're going to lose a lot of your audience.
You lose and you gain. I mean, the starting point is, give me a red wine. Then they might say, give me a Malbec. And then, for a more sophisticated person might say, give me a Malbec from UCO Valley. And then the next step would be, give me a Malbec from Chicages in UCO. And there's great wines for all four of those types of consumers.
Talking about UCO in a bit more detail, you're saying that it's got one of the highest altitudes. And I know I did an interview with Maria Malinaro, I think, from Catina Zapata. She's one of the winemakers there. And we talked about altitudes quite a bit. UCO, what sort of range does UCO Valley have in terms of altitudes?
It ranges from as low as 900 meters up to, I think there's vineyards above 1,300. But the sweet spot's between 1,000 and 1,200 meters.
And
our vineyard's at about 1,100.
Okay, so you think that's in the sweet spot?
I think it's right in the sweet spot.
Lovely, lovely. Okay, so climatically, UCO's a little bit cooler, or I understand it's a little bit more frost prone anyway.
It's a little more extreme. It tends to be warmer during the day and cooler during the night. It's a high desert. There is some risk of frost. One of the reasons that we're at the altitude that we are is that the frost tends to go down valley. So we're on a slope, and the frost tends to sit further down, closer to 900, 950 meters, just half a mile basically below on the slope from where we are.
Yeah.
So there are some frost. Every once in a while, last year we had an almost perfect growing season, so we lost virtually nothing to frost. The year before, we lost maybe 5 or 10% of the Chardonnay, but usually they come early enough that it's before bud rake for most varietals, certainly the core of Malbec and Cabernet Franc. So we don't have too much of a problem on the but when we do, generally it's on the early side. Late frosts are risky, but generally they happen late enough in the growing season that you might not have all the bricks you want, but you're usually pretty close. We've never had a situation where, you know, we were 2 or 3 points below where we wanted to be and we had to get the fruit in the next day.
I'm used to a lot of early frost issues. You know, if you were in Europe last year, everybody was aware of an early frost issue. But late frost is something you don't see a lot of. And normally, the only time you really worry about that is if you're in Canada and you're making iced wine, in which case right. It's all good, really, isn't it? What's the problem with a late frost?
Well, it stops the growth. I mean, you'll lose the leaves, and it stops the there's nothing there. And if you leave it out, if you don't get them in the winery within a relatively short amount of time, they're going to start falling off the vines.
Okay, so if you get a late frost,
yeah, just it stops the development. So as long as you're within a range, I mean, if you were to get a late frost, but you were still, you know, 5 percentage points lower bricks than where you wanted to be, then you would struggle. But generally, it's at the end, and so you might pick a little prior to where you normally would, but it's within a range. Now, if you have a lot of fruit still on the vine, so part of the challenge is you want to space out your harvest. Depending on, I mean, you have a sense of some harvests might start 2 weeks earlier or 2 weeks late. So right. If you're starting late, you may want to pick more fruit early because the challenge becomes logistical more than anything else. So if you an extreme example, if 80% of your fruit is still on the vine and you get a frost, and it's impossible to get that quantity of fruit into the winery fast enough.
Yeah, yeah.
So when you're a little bit later, you've got to plan out your harvest to space it out a little bit to give you a little bit of a wiggle room.
And what are the grape varieties you've got to watch out for late frosts?
Well, our later varietals are, I mean, certainly Malbec and Cab Franc are not necessarily late varietals, but they're so much of a percentage of Mendoza. It's probably 70-80% of all grapes. For us, it's about 65% of our grapes. So quantity-wise, we need to get those in. But the typical late ones would be Cabernet Sauvignon, Syrah are probably the two of the most late bloomers for us. Sangiovese, we've got a little bit of.
Yeah, okay. The other thing Mendoza is known for is hail. My understanding is as the weather comes from the west, the clouds come along, hit Chile, drive up the Andes. As they drive up, they condense. Sometimes they fall as rain, but if they get high enough, they'll get it over the top, but then they fall as hail into Mendoza.
Yeah, basically it's Chile's fault. So they're and they're trying to compete with Argentina. They're sending hail over the mountains toward us. In certain regions, it's a big challenge, and if you go to Mendoza, you'll see many regions that will have hail nets to protect, fabric hanging over the vineyards to protect them.
How small is the holes in that?
It's very thin. It looks like a screen you might see on a screen door, but it's fairly breathable, we don't use it. We are in a fortunate area where most of the storms form above us and fall further down.
Yeah.
So we've had 1-2% loss a year tops, but there are some vineyards that, you know, have been completely decimated in years past. So you can use the hail nets, which a lot of especially vineyards that are making not necessarily bulk wines, but not the highest quality wines. There's certainly an impact, in our opinion, on quality because you don't get as much sunlight. It's going to so on your grapes. So if you're making premium wines, mid-level wines, then the cost benefit analysis of making sure that you don't lose your vineyard to hail is worth it. For us, the quality is the only thing that matters, and we're in a privileged area, so we don't use them.
Okay. I've heard people used to seed clouds with silver nitrate or something crazy like that.
They have these machines. The biggest thing is they look like cannons, and they essentially shoot air into clouds to try and break up the hail that's been developing, or sometimes they can do it from planes. I'm not sure that it really works, but some people do. And if you see some black clouds coming up in the sky, you'll start hearing these boom, boom, and that's the cannons that are going up.
The other thing I understand people winemakers do is they have
pray and drink.
Pray and drink. That's true. But also you have different vineyards dotted around different parts of Mendoza so that you never get wiped out by one hit.
Yes, that's definitely a strategy as well.
Yeah, so, but you don't do that at Vines of Mendoza because all your vineyards are in a single block, aren't they?
That's
We're not worried about hail. I mean, knock on wood. You know, let me phrase that. We're always worried about hail. You know, every you know, we see clouds up there, and it couldn't fall on us. You know, we've gone through 8 harvests, and the most we've ever lost is 3%. So we, at least today, are in a very lucky area. Now, as weather patterns change, that could change. You know, but so far we're in a lucky area, and for us. Because, you know, we're not a big winery that needs to sell millions of bottles of wine. You know, we are 212 individuals that each make a small amount of wine. And for each of them, making the best possible quality is worth the trade-off of they might lose every once out of 10 years, they might lose half of their production. But that's a trade-off they're willing to make so that they can make better wines the other 9 years.
And what's the best thing about being in the UK Valley?
Oh, it's hard to say. I mean, certainly it's one of the most spectacular places in the world in terms of the views. I mean, there's these, you know, vineyards, flat out vineyards, and then straight up towering Andes. And it's peaceful. There's a great energy out there. But for me, it's the intensity of the wines. There's just something about that kind of rocky soil. That the Argentina sun just pulls out the best from.
Yeah, you certainly don't get a lot of bitter phenolics in an Argentinian wine. That's the last thing you expect, is it?
No, and that's the, you know, we're in the challenge on the other side. We've actually got one of our, we do a lot of experimentation, and a lot of our owners are trying to create new and interesting things. We have 33 different varietals planted, and one of our owners is from Germany, and he said, I want to create a Riesling from Argentina, which of course, you know, the best terroir for Riesling in the world, it couldn't be more opposite than the high desert of Uco Valley. But he planted some, and we said, we don't know if this is going to work, but we'll give it a shot. And his first harvest came out, and the wines are pretty good. I mean, they're not all the way there yet, but I think there's a lot of potential. It certainly has the typicity and the characters in the nose and in the mouthfeel.
Not too oily.
But it's not. We don't get any of that. The sun has completely burned that out. However, it is the alcohol's too high. So we've got it's still up about, it was 14.2, and that's just way too high for. It's topping over a bit the fruit. So our challenge will be, if we can get that alcohol down, then I think we'll have some really beautiful wines.
Yeah. I always think of Argentina as being quite a hot, sunny place where you can just keep on ripening till the cows come home. But talking about frost issues, you're talking about Cabernet Sauvignon being sort of towards the end of it. But then you've got loads of other grape varieties that ripen even slower than Cabernet Sauvignon. You've got Petit Verdot, you've got Nebbiolo, Mataro, or whatever you want to call it. You know, there's lots of grape varieties that are quite popular in warmer climates. Have you had a crack at those ones?
We've done a little bit. The Petit Verdot is quite nice there. We just planted some Nebbiolo last year, so we'll see how that goes. We've tried some things that people might say are crazy. We have some. I've planted Zinfandel, the only Zinfandel planted in Argentina, but it's doing really well. I mean, frost it's a relative term. I mean, frost. We lost, you know, 1 or 2%. Max in the last 8 harvests. So it's not very rarely can't get a grape mature, no matter what varietal it is. It's not a big concern in Argentina. We have we have the opposite problem that we want to try and keep the alcohol down and get things in sooner rather than later.
Yeah, okay, that was more my understanding of Argentina as well. I was a bit surprised by late frosts, but I suppose they do happen everywhere, don't they?
Every once in a while, that's the least of our concerns.
All right then, Michael, I think we're going to wrap it up there.
Fantastic. Thanks a lot.
Cheers, mate.
All right, cheers.